Welcome back to the Coaches Rising podcast. I'm delighted to be joined by Jim Detmer. And as usual, speaking with Jim, this was just an incredibly enlivening and illuminating conversation. We're going to be talking about integrity. And I love the way that Jim holds integrity. His definition of what it is so much more enlivening and practical and exuberantly joyful than the more moralistic and kind of impositional way we can hold integrity and impose it on our lives. So we'll talk about the integrity boot camp that Jim runs with the Conscious Leadership Group and the journey that participants go on. And we'll learn lessons from this and how can we begin to bring more integrity into our own lives? What are the distinctions that matter around this? What are the tools and practices we can use? And what are the consequences when we start to live more integrous lives? Jim is an acclaimed coach, speaker, author, and founding partner at the Conscious Leadership Group. He's worked with over 150 CEOs and their teams to integrate conscious leadership into their organizations. He runs monthly forums for select leaders in Chicago and New York, and he is the co-author of the acclaimed The 15 Commitments of Conscious Leadership, a fantastic book I recommend. If you are interested in staying in the loop about the things that Coaches Rising creates, our online trainings for coaches, you can head to coachesrising.com and put your name in the sign-up box there. And that all being said, let's dive in. Here's the podcast with Jim Detmer. I don't have to tell you that these are turbulent times. They're astonishing times. Many people are feeling deeply challenged, more reactive, and my sense is in more need of coaching than ever. And while these times are full of challenges, they're also ripe with evolutionary potential. This is the gift of these times. And I think it's these moments that coaches are built for, so we can help our clients unlock the deeper capacities and intelligence that's required of them now. And that's exactly what our newest program, Unlocking Leaders, is all about. You'll learn how to work at the source code of change, beyond strategy, beyond protocol, at the level of consciousness itself. This, for me, has been by far the biggest leverage I have with my clients. It's the most potent move I can make, because the level of consciousness a leader is operating from determines everything. What they notice, what they miss, whether they react defensively, stay grounded, whether they tighten in control or open into creativity and collaborativity, and ultimately what becomes possible in how they lead. And when you work at this level, you'll be able to tap into these hidden drivers behind decisions and behaviors and unlock possibilities in situations that once felt stuck. And beyond that, importantly, you're going to cultivate a capacity that AI will never possess. As AI expands and begins to dominate procedural and operational coaching, as it grows, it's becoming clearer what it cannot do. And it can't feel, it can't connect in the same way when two human beings come together and the field that they create becomes part of the transformational conversation. It can't work with consciousness, the very source of transformation and the source of the most powerful coaching moves. This is what separates good coaches from great coaches working at this level. And AI can't touch this. So if you're interested to find out more about this program, if you feel called to join us, then head to coachesrising.com/leaders to book your spot. The first class is June 16th with Jim Detmer, just an incredible, masterful coach. And he's joined by Bob Anderson, also a true pioneer in the field of conscious leadership and coaching. And if you sign up by May 29th, you can get the early bird discount. Enrollment is open until June 12th. So head to coachesrising.com/leaders to book your spot.
Jim, it's always a pleasure to be with you. And we just checked in, but you know, hey, seems weird to start our conversation and not check in again. How are you?
Well, right now I have a big smile on my face. I feel happy to be with you, excited about what's going to emerge when we talk. I love it because when you and I talk, something emerges that I think is a surprise or unexpected or delightful to both of us and maybe useful to others. So, yeah, I feel joy and excitement and I told you before, I feel a little flat energetically today, just a little flat. I'm not making that a big deal or anything. Energy of that sort just kind of comes and goes, and I'm just riding it for what it is.
Just to pick up on that, your orientation to that flatness, would it be one of, yeah, I'm just going to welcome that, include it, and in a sense kind of see where that flatness takes me if I inhabit it in some way? Or would it be a different approach?
That would be the approach. It's just, I would just put it in the bucket of a phenomena occurring. So my practice is to simply be with, from kind curiosity, with whatever phenomena is occurring, whether it's the phenomena of images or sounds or sensations in and on the body or feelings. And this would be more like just a energetic vibration. So my first is to notice, and really notice it. What's it like? What does it feel like? Where is it? Is it all over the body? Is it just in part of the body? Does it extend beyond the body? What's it like? And then from there to just open to it. Years gone by, I might have tried to resist it, might have tried to do something to change it. I don't do that much anymore. Now it's like, oh, this is visiting me. And then I might get curious about, is it wanting to show me something? Is it inviting me to something? Is it something it wants me to face? I might just ask some questions like that, but not so much today. As we're recording this, it's kind of mid-morning where I am, and it's been around since I first got up and sat and did my practices today, and it's just more like I just want to be with the energy. Like I noticed when I went for my walk today, I just walked a little more slowly. Just a little more slowly, which felt nice. I wanted my movement to match the energy. That kind of thing. I revealed it to Debbie. I said, I just noticed I'm just a little flat today, just so you can know me. So be with it like a, you know, like a roomie, like a house guest. You know, it's just today's house guest.
I thought you might say that's a beautiful answer. And there's something about, for me, inhabiting where we are fully without resisting it, as you said, or trying to change it, or kind of collapsing into it and perpetuating it, but like consciously inhabiting it, that is an art and actually very fruitful.
Yeah, I love the word you're using, inhabiting. That's become really important to me of late. What does it mean to inhabit, to live in, to abide in the experience? Without, I love your word, without collapsing into it or like being overwhelmed by it. Now, that isn't to say that I don't let it be as intense as it is, but I can always feel the space and the stillness that surrounds and interpenetrates whatever the phenomena is, so I can rest in that space and stillness as I inhabit the whole experience. And you and I have chatted, a lot of my practice right now is really inhabiting it in the body, dropping all the way into the pelvic floor and resting there, all the way back in the pelvis to the sacrum, deep in the feet. All this stuff, as I've told you, I've been playing with Judith Blackstone's realization process, and she's very much about enlightenment being an inhabited experience in the body, which I think is so fascinating. Many of the awakening awareness practices I've done have been, I would call it more awareness-centered, the top quarter of the physical structure, so the head. And those have been beautiful and wonderful. And oftentimes leaving the body. But these are all inhabiting practices. So I love that word you said, inhabiting. What does it mean to inhabit the body? Yeah.
I can feel the pull to explore. This is a huge topic that I think you bring in. I've been thinking about this one a lot, or should I say feeling this one myself. Let's kind of bookmark that and bring in the topic of integrity as well. One of the reasons I reached out to you was to see if you'd be willing to talk about integrity as a topic. You have these integrity boot camps that you've been running, and they look really inspiring, if not super challenging, perhaps. You know? So I would love to talk to you about what happened inside of those boot camps. And so maybe actually I could ask you first, what is integrity to you? What do you mean by that?
Yeah, probably a better place to start with that. And then we can talk about why we created Integrity Bootcamp and what we're designing it to do. So, yeah, at the highest level, integrity, you know, comes from the same root as integer. An integer is a whole number. So for me, integrity has something to do with being whole, undivided, uninterrupted, in a high energetic flow state. And we can talk about flow states and what is meant by all that. So integrity is wholeness. And again, I'll mention Katie Hendricks here because I learned what we're going to explore today, especially the four pillars of integrity from Katie Hendricks. And in the show notes, we ought to reference, she wrote a paper on this, which is kind of the seminal work for me around this. We ought to reference that. But what I learned from her and from Gay was that integrity is energetic wholeness. So if you think, sometimes I illustrate it with the old like Christmas lights that we used to have as a kid that we'd put on the tree. And back when I was a kid, if one of the bulbs went out, kind of the whole strand went out. I think they've hacked that and figured out how not to have that happen. But that's the way it is a little bit. If you have a little breach of integrity, and we can talk about what an integrity breach is, just a little breach of integrity, then it's like your energy just starts to dampen. And the more energy, the more integrity breaches you have, the less energy you have available to you, the less life force. So then I move from there to me, integrity is about aliveness. Aliveness. And what does it mean to be fully alive? And this is so different than the way integrity is usually used. Years ago, I walked into a large investment firm in downtown Chicago. And like many investment firms, they had their core values, you know, up on the wall. And the very first core value, this isn't uncommon at all, was integrity. And I was having a meeting with the CEO that day to talk about coaching. And I asked him, it happened to be him, I asked him, what does integrity mean around here? And he said, well, integrity is real simple. It's just do the right thing. Well, to me, integrity is so much more than doing the right thing, because that presupposes you know what the right thing is. By the way, it was just a short time after that that they got indicted for doing the wrong thing. I got a big kick out of that. And I think they got convicted for it at some level. So to me, integrity is not doing the right thing. It's tending to your aliveness and the circulation of energy. Again, now we do come back to in and on the body, which is where you feel alive. It's a body experience. So integrity is energetic wholeness, uninterrupted circulation of flow. Integrity is full aliveness. So we begin boot camp asking people, how alive are you and what are you willing to risk and not risk for your full aliveness? And that's the way we kick off boot camp, kind of an aliveness inventory. Where, how alive are you in your body? How alive are you in your work? How alive are you in your intimate relationship? How alive are you spiritually? How alive are you with money? How alive are you with your creative life force and what you're bringing into the world? How alive? And we just go, go, go. In fact, before they show up, we have them do that inventory. So we're building pressure. And that, once we see how alive we are or not, then we start exploring the four pillars of integrity, which are four, not exhausted, but four primary ways that we go out of integrity or have integrity breaches and interrupt the flow of integrity. So I'll pause there. That's kind of the way we're approaching the subject of integrity.
Yeah. I mean, firstly, I love the expanded sense of what integrity can mean, as, you know, to be something much more, first of all, appealing and feels like an adventure, if not challenging, but then you know, maybe this moral idea of integrity, which can feel, you know, a bit like parental, like you know, being good or doing the right thing, and it feels a kind of burden. This feels like, hell yeah, like I want more. Who wouldn't want more aliveness? So
yeah, that's so good. Yeah, I agree with you. The normal view can feel moral. It can feel burdensome. Then you come around, and this is so good. I interrupted you, so I want you to complete your thought. But you asked the question, who wouldn't want more aliveness? Well, in my experience, most of us want it, but are unwilling to have it and are terrified of it. We've settled into some level of aliveness because to have more aliveness is to risk something. And we're scared of that. So theoretically, everybody goes, God, I'd love to be fully alive. And we look out at the world like we see, like you watch the Grammys, for example, and you see these artists who, at least in the performance of their music, look so alive. And we go, I want to be that alive. But then you start to face, what am I going to put at risk if I get that alive? If I have an intimate partnership and we have kind of a codependent agreement to, let's say on a scale of 1 to 10, live at a 6 in terms of aliveness. And we can talk about how you agree to that and the things you don't do and do and the things you don't say and do say. And then all of a sudden I get inspired to be more fully alive. And I realize that could create a little turbulence in my intimate relationship. Or you look at your work and you go, I'm like a 4 on a scale of 1 to 10 at work. What's it going to be to commit to my zone of genius and really come alive? What's that going to put at risk? So, yes, who wouldn't want it, to your point? But, yeah, what are you willing to risk to be as alive as you could be?
I mean, that's really powerful and inspiring. So first of all, I'm hearing you actually get people to look at the different aspects of their lives and think about each one and imagine or feel how alive are you in that aspect of your life. You can even rate it on a scale of 1 to 10. And then it really makes sense, you know, because if I look at my life, there are areas where I feel more alive and there are areas where I can feel exactly what you're talking about. You know, and it kind of creeps in. It's insidious. It's like, you know, you get busy with life in inverted commas and then routine kicks in and then there are parts that don't feel like they're allowed to have truly what they want. And then there are other parts that feel afraid because this is kind of cool what I've got, you know, and if I risk it, then I might lose everything. So I'm hearing that it's actually, there's more a stake here, you know, and I'm wondering how do you help people on this journey to towards having more aliveness? Is it like, you know, do people have to get this disclaimer and kind of say like, well, yeah, you're going to have to risk, you know, that's part of the game here. You might lose something, but you might gain something that makes it more worthwhile. Like, how do you help people make that journey? Yeah.
Well, a couple things. We like what's called the change formula in our book, 15 Commitments of Conscious Leadership. It's the last chapter. And basically what it says is that people only change, including become more alive, get into more full integrity. People only change if they have pain or they've got a big vision. It's really the only reason anybody changes out of the status quo. It, you know, we're kind of hardwired to stay in the familiar, in the comfortable, in the quote unquote predictable, as life is. But when I'm kind of managing my life force to stay in a zone of safety, life appears predictable. So what we do at the front end is we want to, I would say it this way, increase the pain. And again, we're not trying to add pain. We're just saying, take an honest look at your life and see, is there pain? You know, most of us can't tolerate the pain of being disconnected from full aliveness or the pain of being disconnected from the oneness. We can't tolerate that pain very much. So we do something to numb the pain. We anesthetize ourselves. We go shopping, or we, you know, binge on Netflix, or we, you know, have a cocktail, or we if we just sat in the bare, unmitigated face of our disconnection from love, from life, from the oneness, it would be existentially so darn painful we couldn't tolerate it. But what we can't tolerate is sitting there very long. So what we do at the beginning is we just say, just sit for a little bit longer and feel what it feels like to not be whole. Increasing the discomfort, because you're going to need some discomfort to motivate you to move through the fear, natural, normal fear of changing your life and getting more alive. And then the second thing that you need, if you're going to risk and move into the fear, is you need a vision. You need a sense of a possibility that you don't yet experience, but it is concrete enough for you that you go, I want that. So again, I'll talk about Gay and Katie. When I first went to a couples weekend with them years ago, 20 years, 25 years ago, at one point they said it's been like years. I think they might have said 20 years since we had any drama in our relationship. And I thought, first of all, bullshit. That's the first thing I thought. But, you know, I hung around them for a few years and I thought, that seems to be true. And Debbie and I were there together and we went away and said, that's a vision of something we want in our relationship, to move out of blame, never blame again, just be responsible, move out of entitlement, never have entitlement or expectations again, just live in appreciation. So we got a vision of something, and then we could feel the pain of not having that. And that, the two of those together, it's like a multiplier. Vision times dissatisfaction gives you enough energy to break through the natural resistance, fear, to make a change. So yes, at the beginning, even before people show up at boot camp, we have them do some things, take some surveys and things like that to begin to increase the dissatisfaction and the vision. That's what we're trying to do. And then oftentimes when I'm coaching somebody, I'll just ask them, how do you numb yourself from the pain of a life that's disconnected from the highest vibration that you could be in? I'll ask it different ways. I wouldn't say it that way to an investment banker, but I'll ask it different ways. How do you numb yourself? And then they'll just list however they numb themselves. I exercise, you know, I run 20 miles a day because when I'm running, I don't feel it. Or I drug myself, or I do whatever I do, right? I obsessively check my email or my do list. And then I'll just say, for the next week until I see you again, would you just be willing to take a hiatus on one of those? And this, again, this isn't a moral thing, like stop drinking for a week. It's not about that at all. It's about, see what happens if you don't drink for a week. Now, what I'm looking for is just when you have the impulse to reach out and grab a beer or have a glass of wine, don't. Sit there for an extra minute and see what comes up. See if you can feel the anxiety, the antsiness, the compulsion. See if you can feel it. And if you can sit a minute longer, see if you can feel what's there. Feel what's there. And what you're feeling is the integrity breach of not being whole, of being disconnected, if you can tolerate it a little bit longer, it will produce a motivation to actually do what needs to be done to come more towards full aliveness. That makes sense?
Totally, yeah. Yeah, beautiful. Couple of like perspectives I'd love to include before we kind of carry on. One is the trauma perspective. You know, if I think about my dampening down of aliveness, you know, I think a bunch of that is done from, you know, conditioning or parts that are, you know, trying to protect me, stop me from feeling hurt in some way. And so that's one perspective to weave in here, because, you know, otherwise it could be that we, I'm not saying you're doing this, but it's like, you know, we kind of get in, the integrity superego comes in and it's like, you're not feeling aliveness, you're not in integrity, you should do, you know, so we impose that as an endgame. And the other perspective, and this is kind of bad interviewing because I should probably let you answer that one, but I know you're good at this. There's, you know, but like a certain spiritual perspective which says, in a way, the more you create desires that you don't actually, the bigger the gap between where you are and what you want is, the more suffering you'll feel. And the game is actually feeling super content with what you've already got. So why would you want to play that game of, you know, having your life align with your highest desires for what you want? Yeah.
You asked like four questions that are all so good.
Sorry, yeah.
No, it's great. So let me start here and then we can dissect this a little bit. So at the beginning, in this frame that I'm sharing with you, and then I'll help make some distinctions on this frame, we could start to refer to what I would call gross breaches of integrity on one side of the continuum, obvious places where you're showing up in such a way that there are integrity ruptures in your sense of energy flow, all the way across the continuum to the other side, which would be subtle, very subtle. Okay, so might as well bring it in here. When we do integrity boot camp, we deal with four of these, what we would call major breaches of integrity. And Gay Hendricks called these the four uns. So these are unowned. This is places where you're not owning responsibility, where you're living in victimhood. Unowns. Unfelts. These are feelings you're not feeling all the way through to completion. You're repressing and suppressing. And a great way to block life flow or life force is to do that. Unsaids. These are places where you have withholds and you're not revealed. By the way, and that continuum is all the way from lies, where you've lied to people, all the way over to just subtle withholds, things that you've thought three or more times and haven't shared. And then the last is unkept. These are unkept agreements, just places where you made an agreement with yourself or another or others, and you haven't kept your agreement, or you haven't made an agreement that you have a whole body yes to. So unowns, unfelts, unsaids, unkept. So when you come to Integrity Bootcamp, those are the ones we work on. Because those are the ones that most people, when they do an integrity inventory, can pretty quickly see, wow, I can see how I'm bleeding energy because I haven't told, you know, my wife that I had an affair or that I am having an affair. They can see where that might be affecting their integrity, their wholeness, because they have to pretend, they have to manipulate, they have to control, which blocks their aliveness. So gross interruptions. Now then you move across this continuum and I'll go all the way over to subtle. So again, you and I have talked about like Judith Blackstone and the realization process. So now these subtle ones are trauma. And they don't have to be trauma with a capital T. They can be trauma with a little t, like you were held by a parent who was a smoker. And the smell of smoke to you was repulsive. So you contracted your breath so you wouldn't breathe it in. And now when you get still enough and spacious enough and subtle enough, you can inhabit your body and feel that the body is contracted. It's bracing. It's locked up at a very subtle level. So then, way over on the subtle level, then we're going to do practices that help those contractions soften or relieve. So this would be all the wonderful tools that have become available to us in recent years around healing trauma, all of which is going to be done in the body. Well, again, where I have a contraction in the body, a subtle contraction, let's say in the solar plexus, because I read my world and it was an angry world as a baby, as a child, as a young teenager. And so I contracted my ability to feel anger. I locked up because there was no room for it. Or what I saw was every time anger shows up, somebody gets hurt. Now, this contraction is very subtle. So we start over on the gross end. Remember, unfelts. Would you be willing to feel your feelings all the way through to completion? And when we start over there, we just start with the obvious stuff. Like, would you be willing to feel the anger you've never felt about the betrayal that you're aware of, that's part of your story, that you tell the story of, about how you got betrayed by a friend in college? And you've never let yourself feel the anger. And we might actually have them move the anger, play some music and, you know, take a bat and hit a cushion. So at the gross level, they can start to feel, wow, there's so much life force in this anger. There's so much power. There's so much voice here. And they start to do it. And at the end of, you know, a few minutes of just moving anger, for example, they're so alive. If you take a before and after picture, they're so alive. So they learn to be a little more friendly with gross suppression and repression of anger, let's say. And they learn to bring it into their life a little more. And then as they continue along the path deeper and deeper, eventually they start to make the subtle distinction. So you brought up trauma, so now I'm making a distinction between subtle and gross in the way that we move around these things. You know, gross lies and subtle places in our life where we're just not willing to face something, which is a way we're lying to ourselves about reality. Okay, so that was the first thing, and you can double-click on that if you want. Now, the other thing you said is, now, what are you doing here? You're saying you increase people's dissatisfaction in their vision. Many of the traditions would teach that's not the way to go. Because if you increase their vision, it's just going to create their increase their attachment. If you increase their dissatisfaction, it's just going to increase their aversion. And you should be telling people and giving people an experience of everything in the now moment is perfect. Just rest back into what's here now. Everything is just as it is meant to be. Can you just relax into that and be? There is no craving. There is no wanting. Okay. I believe that. I experience that. So do you. Right? So remember the model that we've worked with about the four states of consciousness. To me, by me, through me, as me. All right. To me, you're living in victimhood. By me, you're starting to live in a self-authored, self-creating life. You're starting to have meaningful agency. Okay? Through me, you've got agency. You've got a sense of a self. It's okay. You have a self, and the self is getting aligned and free, getting into integrity. Then when you move to through me, you say, I'm going to surrender this self. I'm going to let this self be porous so that life force can flow through it, through me. And then as me, you're going to start to discover that there is no you to be out of integrity in the first place. All of that is just a collection of ego identities or personas sitting on the surface. Now, I totally respect that at times think the way to go is to go right from to me to as me. Skip the by me and the through me. Just go right from to me to as me. So now you're just going to go, you know, you're going to go to a Zen monastery and you're going to start to practice until you can see the truth of what is. Great. And again, I think there are various paths. Or just, you know, take, you know, 7 grams of psilocybin and see through the illusion. Boom. Whop. You know, great. I love that path. Give that path a whirl. Most people I know don't do that path and then stay fully realized. They might have a recognition, but not a realization, certainly not a stabilization. So then for many people, there is a path that includes an identity that is becoming more psychologically mature, more spiritually mature, more psychologically and spiritually free. Many people, that's what's happening. So our boot camp is moving from to me to by me. When we talk about unowns, it's moving from blaming and complaining to me to taking 100% responsibility by me. So we're honoring that many people have a path that moves through an apparent self and an apparent biography where you were apparently traumatized, all of that stuff. We're honoring all of that and taking the journey to an as-me experience where you realize that what you are could never be out of integrity in the first place. It is always only whole, and it is always only fully alive. So we're taking a little bit of a journey through to me, by me, through me, to as me versus the direct experience into as me. I'm great with both. We just feel called, and I practice both. We just feel called to this pathway a little bit. So I said a lot there. What comes up for you around that? Amazing. How would you push amazing. Against that?
what I think is amazing is that... Well, first of all, what comes up for me is I actually think that for Westerners, what you're describing, this, you know, progression is actually better. And even and this is a bit of a rabbit hole. Yeah, we're going to get in a moment to people listening back to, you know, the work you're doing in the boot camps. But there are actually different views in spiritual schools on what the ideal outcome is. So this is, you know, going back to your work with Judith Blackstone as well, it relates to that. So some schools are like renunciate, and they kind of almost say like the world is the thing that will get in the way of your awakening, and therefore it's bad, you know. And so, you know, want to renounce the world, renounce desires, and even this thing called a self doesn't really exist. There's no self. So no self is a core. Renounce the self. But there are actually other schools which have a different, more tantric, Vajrayana, you know, I don't know in Christian mysticism what they would call it, but, and they're kind of saying, well, actually, the Buddha didn't really say the self is, there's no self. He said something more subtle than that. And actually, their aim is to kind of empower people to live a kind of life of enjoyment and freedom and effectiveness, you know. And I think that's actually much more suited for Westerners and what's needed in our times. And so I feel that I could kind of sit there, and I'm not denying there isn't a valid experience of seeing through the illusion of, but it's not appealing to me personally. It doesn't, you know, I don't want to sit in a cave and not care about anything. I actually want to live a wholehearted life, feeling everything fully, the juiciness of everything, and yes, feel that it's, you know, not to be attached to it. There's a freedom inside of all of it, but to live wholeheartedly. And I think that's why I like what you're talking about with integrity, because it basically cuts to the chase. You know, there's a lot of people out there, I include myself to varying degrees, where you think you're spiritual, but actually you're living in kind of it's kind of bullshit. There's kind of a lot of, you're bullshitting yourself, you know, about how much aliveness you feel. So that's what comes up for me.
Oh, it's beautiful. I love the distinction you're making in the traditions. And I'm not an expert in those. I'll leave that to you, to Judith. I think Judith has given some thought to that, others. At this point in my life, I just more notice the path that this personality has taken, mine, and I don't make that wrong, and it seems to be a useful path for others, and I'm aware that it's not the only path. So yeah, I'm like you. I want fullness and emptiness. I want them both. I want the fullness of actually being able to fully taste a ripe peach on a summer afternoon when the juice is drooling down my chin. I want to feel that. I want to feel my taste buds fully alive. I want to feel the juice running down my face as the breeze and the sun waft across my body. I want to feel that. I want to feel anger. I want to feel it. I don't want to be controlled by it, attached to it. I don't want to move it into the world in a less than loving way, unless I do. But I want to feel it. I want to feel brokenheartedness. So that's the path that I'm taking. And again, I'm not an expert in all the paths, and I trust that all these paths have been of great service to people. I'm just aware of the path that I'm taking.
Mm. Stunning, yeah. Yeah, well, let's get back to the journey you help people make in the boot camp. So, you know, we kind of, I appreciated what you wove in there around, you know, trauma and the gross level and the subtle levels of the ways we can begin to relate to our relationship to integrity and our aliveness and where we leak, where we breach energy. So, you know, imagine someone's kind of assessed their lives and, you know, they've like, okay, there's these different places where I feel more or less in integrity, but I feel committed to this journey. What do you do next with people? What's the journey you take them on?
Yeah. So at the boot camp, like I said, we build the whole boot camp around these four pillars. So we begin the boot camp after some introduction and, you know, kind of orienting ourselves as a, and we have just 20 people who come to this. So it's a small group. And we usually have 5 to 7 staff people there for the 20 people. So it's a highly supportive environment because it's going to get a little bumpy and a little messy. And we want to make sure people are radically supported as that starts to happen for them. So the place we start is something like this. We'd like you to do a little inventory of anybody or anything you're currently blaming in your life. Blaming's a good place to start. And so we have an inventory of blame. Are you blaming your parents for? And then we have a list of any things you could be blaming your parents for. Are you blaming God for? A list of anything you could be blaming God for. Are you blaming, you know, your environment? Are you blaming the culture? Are you blaming, what are you blaming? And one of the keys to this is because a lot of people come to these who really have done work, you know, like you and me. And some of them have not really dealt with all the blame that they really have going on. They're a word we all like, right, is spiritual bypass. They're kind of bypassing the blame, you know. And so we want to rip the scab off that and go get unconscious for a few minutes. Like drop all of your total awakening and your pure love and just for a minute, just blame. Okay, then we have them come up with a list. Now we suggest that every place where you're still attached to thinking that someone or something, a person, a circumstance, a condition, is the cause of your experience, that's a place where you're out of integrity. That's a place where you're leaking energy because you haven't experienced the potency of stepping in to being the full creator of your experience. Creatorship is an alive experience. Victimhood is a deadening experience. So we do that. And then, you know, Joel, because you and I have hung out a bunch, then we'll have them take one or two of those. We have them get into the Cartman triangle. We have them fully land on the basis of victim, villain, hero, and bitch, moan, and complain for several minutes. They go through it. They light up the room. They get to be witnessed in where they're still in victimhood. And then we go through that and then we say, great. So what feels a threat to you around this issue? Because whenever you're in blame, you're in a sense of threat. So we go into the core wants that people have, the wanting for approval, control, security, separation, and oneness. And we say, which of those feels like it's a threat in this issue? And then they find the deep, deep breach in the center of their soul where they have outsourced to a person, circumstance, or condition, a sense of core well-being. Find it. Feel it for a moment. And then underneath that, what they discover is there's a scared one. Wherever we're disconnected from the wholeness, it's because down deep there is a threatened, scared one. So then we do a whole chunk on deep acceptance, deep welcoming of the scared part. That's where it goes. So this is all just on the first bucket of unowns, where you're not taking responsibility. First, get unenlightened, bitch, moan, and complain. 2 minutes on the drama triangle. Make it big. Find what the core threat is, approval, control, security, separation, or oneness, which we got from the Sedona method and Hale Dwoskin. Then down below that, now we're deepening, deepening, deepening down to the scared one. And then we spend meaningful time deep in the sense of loving acceptance for the scared one. And sometimes the individual can't source their own sense of welcoming for the scared one. So that's where you use the group or a learning partner or one of the coaches who can see the scared one and can extend kindness and compassion. Sometimes that's through a level of holding. It could be physical holding. It could be emotional or spiritual holding. Once that relaxes, softens just a little bit, then we invite them to see how they're actually the creator of their own experience. Now, that doesn't mean that they created themselves with a particular disease, a diagnosis. It doesn't mean that. Some people believe that. We don't want to take people there at first. It's too terrifying. But just how are you responsible for creating whatever suffering you have going on there? And we call that owning your unconscious commitment. We do a whole thing with them on that. And then we'd move from there to teach us how we could create a suffering, how we could dampen our energy the same way you do. So now it's teach the class. And then that becomes the formula for shifting. Now, are you willing, this is the final thing, are you willing to stop blaming your high school band leader for not making you first chair trombone, and you've carried that wound forever? Are you willing to stop blaming and get curious and open and responsible and empowered? So on pillar one, unowned, we do all that. Like, that's the first 6 hours or something of the whole thing. Boom. And all, we're not going to handle every unowned in their life, but we're going to give them a set of tools to handle whatever unowns they have. And then we have a follow-on small group people can be in, and they can just keep practicing, just keep practicing, just keep practicing. That's bucket number one. And then day two, we pick up bucket number two. What about those pesky feelings that you feel like you're at the effect of? Like you're at the effect of your sadness, or you're at the effect of your scare, or you're at the effect of your sexual feelings. And then we spend like 6 or 7 hours just starting through the same process. Are you willing to feel your feelings? So we have to give them a whole new basis of what a feeling is. That's the next one. And then the next big chunk is, okay, now just let's look at all the places in your life where you're not fully revealed, where you're pretending to be something you're not. And we do an inventory. Same thing. Inventory, inventory, inventory. And then we take them through what would it be like to be a fully revealed person. And there we just have them start revealing to somebody else. Now, they might have a withhold from, you know, their older brother that they've lived with for years. We don't at that point ask them to pick up their phone and call their older brother, as some traditions have done. We just say, would you reveal it to one other person? Just say it and let the other person be a stand-in for your brother. And they get the experience of, oh my God. And it's, we want them to feel this, an immediate surge of energy, life force, wholeness. So now, you know, the event is like 4 days long. Now we're in the second day and they've gotten so much more energy back from handling all the places they're blaming. They're getting energy back. Now they're getting energy back from feeling feelings. Now they're getting energy back from starting to share their withholds. And that night at dinner, or one of the nights at dinner, what we have them do, because people never do this. So these are total strangers. So they're sitting with a coach and like 4 other people at dinner. And we have them go around the dinner table. This sounds wild, but it people love this. Now that they're getting into a safe container, and they share their aversions and attractions with each other.
About each other.
Yeah. So I have an aversion to your smile. I have an aversion to this. Now, at that point, we've taught them that all aversions and all attractions are projections.
Right.
We've taught them all about projection. But then we say at the end of dinner, check your aliveness. Do you feel more alive or less alive having risked revealing a little bit? And everybody goes, more alive. Now, you might or might not want to live that way in your day-to-day life. We'll talk about that before we release you back to go home. But just feel it. And then the last portion is all about being impeccable with your agreements and making clean agreements. And then we do a section on getting lined up with your life purpose and living in your full aliveness as you feel your energy. The question is, what are you going to do with all this energy you get back once you get more into integrity? Well, you're going to create something that aligns with what your purpose is in life. And you can discover your purpose through spiritual practice. You can declare your purpose. We don't care. Just have some place where you're going to involve that creative expression into the world, because you're going to have so much energy when you get into integrity. You're going to look for a place to creatively express or go deeper in relationship. Or you could take all that energy and just put it into sitting still at the base of a tree and encountering the oneness that you have with the tree. We just want you to have some creative flow. Otherwise, you're going to have all this energy come on board and your life will get messy just because you won't know what to do with the energy. So that's what Integrity Bootcamp is, kind of in a nutshell. That's what we do.
It's striking, the gestalt of this picture that you paint, where all the things that have been subtly, maybe even unconsciously, sucking up that energy. You know, I'm just thinking of the thoughts that I have, like, you know, every 6 months where I'm like, oh, you know, I never quite replied to that email, and that person messaged, and I didn't reply, and it was and it's just there. It's like, and then it goes, the thought goes away. And then I know it's in the system. So there's this sense of surfacing things that are holding up that energy, blocking that energy, but also at the same time helping people to become free enough to kind of be in alignment with that definition of integrity that you brought at the beginning, which is, you know, this sense of truth and aliveness, so that in the moment, they're able to live in... I mean, I'm kind of repeating back your words to you, but now from this deeper understanding of, like, now they're in the flow of that integrity, you know? So they get in the experience, for example, of sitting at dinner and saying, you know, I was a bit annoyed when, by the way, you were eating, you know?
Yes.
And they know that that's more... I know that's more about me, you know? But so, yeah, it's radical. And I imagine not for the faint-hearted, but I get the sense you create a container and an understanding. I mean, I know your work from it, you know, being working with one of your coaches, and that it's addictive, and it sounds challenging, but also there's very powerful containers for it. So, yeah, I'm not sure there's a question in there, but I'll just let you riff.
Well, it is challenging. You know, in all the pre-work and stuff, we say, this is not like, conscious leadership 101. This is like 301 or 401. So we actually have prerequisites. You have to have gone to an introduction to conscious leadership, one of our little six-hour classes. Ideally, we like you to have had some experience with this kind of stuff that we'll check out in your app. You have to send in an application. Because we want to know that this is going to be friendly for you, and we want to know that this is right timing. And what we don't want is to have 18 people coming in ready to play the game at a certain level and have two people who are unwilling to play the game at that level. Now we've got a wonky container. So it's our responsibility to get the container as supportive, radically supportive, and as tight and aligned as we can get it. So it is challenging. We say that it's lovingly challenging. It is provocative, lovingly provocative. And, you know, two or three of our coaches are SE-trained therapists, somatic experience-trained therapists. So if somebody starts to have an experience, we have the support in the room to give you what you need to kind of equilibrate your nervous system and help you be with what's occurring. And we're all kind of doing it together. We're kind of, over the course of 4 days, we're going deeper and deeper together. And then the last about 24 hours, we're integrating back. So you can go back to life. Because that's one of the questions. Okay, so now I've had this experience where I'm living this way around, you know, taking responsibility and feeling feelings and being open and honest and revealed and making impeccable agreements and only doing what I have a whole body yes to. That's that fourth one. When we get to that, like that last dinner, we say, only have dinner with somebody you have a whole body yes to having dinner with. Don't do what is your normal societal thing. Don't be just a socialized self who does what you do every place else in life. And if you don't want to have dinner with anybody, you just want to go sit out by a stump and commune with the rabbits, go do it. Only do what lights you up. And again, then what people discover is they're totally out of touch with what lights them up. Totally. They've subjugated their knowing of what lights them up to a socialized self. And we're inviting people more back to a wild self, to a wild self. And so we do that. Well, now they're going to go home and be with their family, or they're going to go back to work. You know, how do you do that? So we spend a bunch of time helping people how to transition back and not, you know, do no harm. Not like we tell people, don't go home and start doing this with your family. They didn't sign up for this. Don't go inflict this on them. Eat your own cooking for a while, you know. Maybe stay in one of our small groups. Practice a little bit there until somebody says to you, hey, you know, you seem more alive. What's going on? Then maybe you could talk about it. But it's because people, we've seen people, you know, make some messes going home and saying, you know, you're blaming me. You shouldn't be blaming me. Well, that's not going to work. So we do a whole lot of integration work.
I mean, I guess that's falling in. You're actually in victimhood at that point, aren't you? If you're like, my family's not playing along, you know, I sat them down and I said to my five-year-old, right. Get with it. We're going to do it. You know, we're doing an integrity boot camp weekend.
Right. Now you've moved to trying to control your world. You know, exactly. Now you're going to force your world to be the way you think your world should be, and just see how much energy it takes to do that. Yeah. You want to exhaust yourself, start trying to control your world.
Well, that actually ties up the question I have, which is about, you know, of course, this is a very specific container you're describing that's sounds very potent. It's set up for a very specific purpose and journey. And what would you recommend for people at home listening in terms of how to orient towards integrity? And I'm just to expand on that, I'm thinking, is this something that you know, in a way, if you feel called to it, it's a journey, you know, to live in integrity. It's not like an overnight thing where, you know, one minute you're not in integrity, the next you are? Or and does it take time to kind of get into the deep end and live in a radical way? Or, you know, is it actually that, yeah, you kind of have to, is this, you're in or you're out? And I'm just, one thing I'm thinking of our interactions, which I've really appreciated over the years, where, because you really walked the talk with this, where I've said, Jim, are you up for doing this thing? And you'll always get back with utter clarity, and I really trust that in you. And even you've said things to me like, you know, I can't make a promise my future self can't keep, you know. And even sometimes my friends get annoyed because I say that about going out for dinner next week, you know. So there's like, that's a radical commitment to, right, to integrity. So yeah, how would you invite people to kind of
such a good question, Joel. You know, whenever the question about anything for me around the realm of waking up is, can it be sudden and, let's say, permanent or roughly permanent, or is it a process? I say both, because I hold that, I guess, for some people, enlightenment can be sudden and permanent, because we all know enough stories about people for whom it appears sudden and permanent. At least that's what they report. So I always say, at least be open to the possibility that it could be sudden and permanent. And then I say, but for me and the vast majority of people that I work with, it is not sudden and permanent. It is progressive, and it takes place with lots of repetitions over a long period of time. So, you know, we've talked before. I do like the idea. I think it's that the Buddhists bring forward there's recognition, realization, stabilization. So at our boot camps, I think people start to recognize, they have a recognition moment of what integrity feels like, what it feels like, a felt sense in the body, and what it feels like to have your life force dampened. Okay, that's recognition. Realization is, wow, I can actually start to play with this day in and day out. Some days more than others, some days not at all. And then stabilization, which is, this is the way I'm living. Now, in my experience, this is the way I am living. And not perfectly, goodness gracious. I mean, there are days I don't feel my feelings all the way through. I'm unaware of them, or I'm too busy, or they're too painful. No problem. I just, like, fell off the horse. I was on the integrity horse. I fell off the horse. No big deal. We say all the time, you know, maybe the more you do the journey, the less you fall off the horse, but you still fall off the horse. When you fall off the horse, you stay off the horse a little less long. You get back on sooner. And you don't make quite a mess as big as you did when you used to fall off the horse. So less frequent, less time, and, you know, less chaotic. So in my experience, it's a process. It's a journey. It's a walk. And so that's why I come to, again, some people can probably do it all alone. I couldn't. And I don't know many people who can. Most of us need community. So I always recommend finding a community of people who want to walk together. Because I need support on the days that I'm, you know, contracted and scared and out of integrity. I need some people to see me, reflect me back to me, and love me. And I need some people where we can learn and grow and practice together. So I always recommend, you know, get some people. And, you know, practically speaking, if you like what I'm talking about as a way to do integrity, there are communities that exist around this. Again, Gay and Katie Hendricks, you can go to their website. They're putting on things like this. Now, they might or might not call it exactly this, but everything they do is rooted in this. All the stuff that we do at the Conscious Leadership Group is rooted in this. If that's too formal for you, maybe you could take our book, The 15 Commitments, where we cover this, and you just focus on Commitment 1, Commitment 3, Commitment 4, and Commitment 6. Those are the four pillars of integrity. And get a book club together and practice together. Or just find one friend who you want to practice being a little more authentic and revealed, a little more candor. And you're just going to have a little bit of a buddy relationship where you're going to support each other to be a little more revealed in life. So that's the way I see it. It could be instantaneous. For most people, it's progressive. And you need a source of what we would call information or teaching or mentorship. That can be a book or a tape, or it could be an actual mentor, a podcast, whatever. And you usually need a community. Don't you? I mean, you have a community.
Yeah. No, I think it's for me, without it, it's very difficult. There are a few remarkable individuals who seem to have, you know, that kind of self-sovereignty and brilliance in them, but that's not me. And particularly when it comes to things like integrity, I think that's even more important for me than things like waking up. But I think maybe waking up is integrity too, you know. It's so, yeah, essential.
Yeah.
And I mean, maybe just, you know, you're naming where we can find out more about your work with the Conscious Leadership Group, and I highly recommend people check out your book. And just a final question, just for a minute or so, is, you know, do you see more people orienting towards integrity and your work in these times with everything that's unfolding? Do you think it's making this, are people getting more interested in it or not? Are you just saying it's, you know, it's, hey, it's, we've just been doing what we do. It's still the same.
Well, again, this is a question for you. You think about this, and for everybody who's motivated to listen to this, you know, in simplistic terms, the divide is getting greater. Right? The divide is getting greater at every level. And so the distinction between people who are moving towards love versus moving toward fear is getting, it appears to be getting greater. The distinction of people who are moving towards integrity versus moving towards being out of integrity seems greater all the time. At least, you know, in my world, in the United States, it's just getting so distinct. So distinct. Yeah, there are more people moving towards integrity. Now, that I have a very small sample here, but many of the tribes that I'm part of, in addition to what we choose to be doing right now in the face of what the world is becoming and what's happening, we're choosing to double down on who we're being. Who we're being. Because we're believing and experiencing that the way we're being is actually going to be the reconciling force in the polarity. So there's going to be option A, option B, and a reconciling force. Always option A, option B, a reconciling force. And we believe that it is the way awake, loving, present people are being that becomes the reconciling force. And that doesn't mean that we aren't doing a bunch, but we're doing it from being, from deep trust, from deep, deep love we're doing as we hold the vibration of being. So, yeah, many people find this path that we're talking about very useful, and they're excited to go down this path because the path is demarcated. It's clear. And the other option is becoming clearer all the time as well. So I think that the world, the division is greater, and I think the division brings clarity, and who knows if there will be a reconciling force, who knows if one side will end up the dominant paradigm, who knows if we'll be around to talk about it in the future. Who knows? But I want to root in integrity. I want to root in this deep, deep space of love and humility, for God's sake, humility and openness.
Thanks for tuning into the podcast. I really hope you enjoyed it. And a reminder that the early bird enrollment is now open for our upcoming live training with Jim Dethmer and Bob Anderson. It's called Unlocking Leaders, and it's going to teach you how to coach at the level of consciousness, which is, for me, the highest leverage move you can make as a coach. Your client's consciousness is the place where the deepest, truest transformational breakthroughs come from. And often traditional coaching misses this, and it's something that our clients need us to learn as coaches, because our times are calling for something deeper. We've got to go beneath the content of our experience, beneath strategy, to the source of change. And that's exactly what Unlocking Leaders is designed to teach you. I'm so proud of this program, of what it's become. I feel it's our offering in these times. And if you're ready to answer the call of these times, then you can join the full program. So just head to coachesrising.com/leaders to book your spot. And remember, you can get the early bird discount if you join by 29th of May. Here we are. We're at the end of the podcast. Just a heads up again, if you're not on our mailing list and you want to stay in the loop about other things we create, then head to coachesrising.com, put your name in the sign-up box there. You'll also find some of our other offerings, our online trainings for coaches there. And just want to end by wishing you well, and I'll see you again next time.